Chapter 26 Planning. Although many of the clans had taken steps to prepare for further Nathani actions, most steps targeted weapons and ammunition, food and medical supplies, and training. While Yosef didn't want to push too many things at once in the Kadeli, when the initially agreed-on actions were underway, he felt it was time to address several other important issues that the clans might not appreciate. He waited until there was a scheduled meeting with Kulich, Peter Kenrick, Vorig Lewis, and Dennis, and until they finished the agenda items. Mera also attended, after Yosef suggested that there was no reason she couldn't resume her earlier duties as recorder for the meetings. Contingencies.
That seems to be enough discussion on how we're doing with training, said Kulich.
That was the last item on the list. Is there anything else?
Yes, Kulich, I have two items I believe are important, said Yosef. One is the need for better maps, and the other is what you would call possible plans. There's no exact single word in Kadeli for what I'm referring to, so I'll use the word from my own language, contingencies.
Yosef wondered how the Keelan leaders would react to contingency planning. It sounded logical when most people thought about it, but depending on the depth of looking for possible events, it could sound pretty weird. He remembered articles cropping up in the United States every few years about Pentagon's contingency planning. Everything from invading Albania to a zombie apocalypse. The media either sensationalized it or made fun of stupid things the military concerned itself with, never bothering to understand the purpose of such planning, which was not the stated objectives, but to create skeletal plans that could be adapted to unpredicted real-world events. He remembered someone mentioning how the Pentagon used to have a department that did nothing but contingency planning, which started a shell game of renaming the office and moving it around the Pentagon to hide it from the media. It was time to see how the Keelanders reacted. It refers to anticipating what future actions you might need to take and putting together plans for how to accomplish what you would need to do. Clan Keelan is already doing something like this with food storage and plans to move the people into more defensible sites, should it be necessary. However, what I'm referring to is looking at the different possible actions the Nathani will take and how we will respond.
Aren't we already doing this?
Lewis complained. In general, yes. I'm talking about more specific possibilities and what we would need to do in each case. What if the Nathani land an army near Salford and move toward Kernford? Or instead of Kernford, they move west toward Gwilimer or east toward Metak? How would our responses differ to the three possibilities? What if they attack Stent by land or Pewit by sea? Those provinces are on the other side of Kadelium, and it would take a 6 day or more for the Alliance to get help there. If it did, how would that weaken the defenses back here?
That's absurd, exclaimed Lewis. There's an endless number of possibilities. We couldn't conceivably plan for them all.
Maybe not in details, no, said Dennis, but many possibilities would lead us to take similar actions. In Yosef's first example, whichever of the clans farthest away was attacked, wouldn't our responses be the same or similar?
Right, said Yosef, jumping on Dennis's grasp of a key point. If we make a plan for what we'd do if the Nathani attack Pewit, then wouldn't our response be similar, even almost identical, if they attack Stent or Swavebroke? We don't need every little detail, just the major decisions and requirements.
Yosef hurried on before the others could interject.
If we have enough such plans, let's call them contingency plans, then no matter what the Nathani do, we can go to a contingency plan that most closely matches. Although a plan would have to be adapted,
we would have a scaffold to build on.
College had listened without comment until now.
I can see the use of such contingency plans. But it sounds like a lot of work, and who would do it? None of us here has that kind of time.
That's a problem, admitted Yosef. I don't know how much of this we could do for it to be useful. Still, I think it's worth trying. I suggest each of us individually or in pairs look at a few different scenarios and see what we can come up with. Then we could bring in other people to take what we've done and adapt those plans to other scenarios. Naturally, we'd have to review the first plans that the new people develop, but hopefully, they could eventually continue with only occasional supervision.
Who would these other men be?
Asked Kenrick.
That would be other men and women, said Yosef. Most will be men, but we need to become accustomed to including capable women to do any work that helps the clan prepare. That's any work and any role, except the main fighting units.
Does anyone doubt that Mara could do this work?
I suspect she's not the only Keelan woman of sufficient ability.
Mara had listened to the men without making a comment about the discussion. She still wasn't used to being an active participant in men's meetings, no matter how much confidence Yosef expressed to her. Customs and habits died hard.
I suppose, Lewis said, in a tone Yosef interpreted as dubious and not wanting to get into an argument with Mara, which itself supported Yosef's point.
Anyway, we just need to leave that possibility open, said Yosef, satisfied that he'd gotten a foot in the door. Mara had already made a list of women she thought could contribute to such planning, including two sisters at St. Thomas Abbey, and a third cousin, Riona Clawfin, whom Mara couldn't stand personally, but whom she said was sharp as a honed knife. Yosef hadn't mentioned that he thought such contingency planning would help the mindsets of men who were likely to be leaders in fights to come. Leading and decision-making required learning to consider many factors, including logistics, intelligence, and terrain.
Petter and Vordig, said Yosef, using their first names, a recent familiarity.
You must have assistants and people you know who could do this work. If we work on the example plans, they could be involved and learn enough to take a bigger role.
Kenrick nodded enthusiastically.
My middle son.
He lost the lower part of a leg from a stupid wagon race 2 years ago. He does much of the family's accounts, but he chafes at not being able to fight. He's bright enough and certainly would be diligent in working on these contingency plans. Even if the plans don't prove advantageous, I'd be inclined to put him working on them, if only to give him a chance to feel useful.
He sounds like a good candidate, said Yosef, although don't rule out that he might contribute to fighting if it comes to that. Any clan members might find themselves fighting or leading from defensive positions, and firing behind walls or barricades doesn't require running.
As we proved in St. Sidran's, said Dennis, a satisfied set to his face.
Lewis didn't look happy. His forehead wrinkled, and he chewed on the side of his tongue as if coming to a decision he didn't like.
My daughter Isla, he said reluctantly. I confess I haven't known what to do with her. Even with Mara as an example, customs are customs, and I'm not the most flexible of men.
College and Kenrick both laughed at his statement of the obvious.
You've convinced me, said College, still smiling and with an arm over Lewis's shoulder. It's your idea, Yosef, so I'll let you work out the example plan details with the others.
Actually, I thought of letting Mara do the organizing.
Mara stiffened in her chair. Yosef had said nothing to her about such a role.
Clever,
said College. You think women should be involved, and Mara will have a better chance at recruiting them than a man would.
I still think most will be men.
He looked at his daughter. You understand that ability and hard work will be the most important factors in recruiting.
Of course, Father.
Talk with Petter, Vortig, and Dennis and get their candidates. I assume Josef will propose a list of initial contingencies.
I'll do that and give you a list to look at by tomorrow.
Josef confirmed. College glanced at Mara, who furiously wrote notes, her quill racing over a sheet. He waited until she pulled the quill away. The headman looked again at Josef.
You said you had another item?
Maps.
We need far better maps. I know you have extensive maps for Keelan Province, but we need the most detailed maps possible for all the provinces. This is part of the contingency planning, to have detailed knowledge of every place we might have to go on the island. Ideally, this project would involve all the clans. And by detailed, I mean there is no such thing as too much detail. Every hill, rivulet of water, pond, boggy area, every bridge and its condition, meaning what load can it carry and what's the fastest way to destroy it, if necessary. The vegetation, meaning the type and size of trees. If there's a creek that's seasonal, we need to know approximately when there will be water in it, where there are reliable fords, no matter the water level, and we must be sure it shows up on every map of the area. The thing is, we will never know what piece of information is critical until we need it. Therefore, no detail is too small in the information gathering stage. Later, we can winnow out all but the most important facts. When we have maps we're reasonably satisfied with, they need to be distributed to relevant leaders of both fighting men and non-combatants. There can't be different versions of maps. If an order comes to take some action, the order might include map information. The recipient of the order needs to look at a map and the coordinates and know he is looking at the same map as the person giving the order. All four men nodded their understanding and agreement, almost from the first words out of Josef's mouth.
Good, he thought. No convincing needed for this one. No reason to get into details yet about relief maps, fake maps that the Narthani capture, or anything else I can think of.
Josef felt relieved when Kenric took the lead.
This is something I can look into, College. I already oversee the registrar offices and records, and most registrar agents have experience in surveying, so it should only be an extension of what they already do. One difference may be that the maps need to include altitude, how high a point of land is above sea level, said Josef. One type of map we'll make is called a topographic map, which has lines indicating altitudes.
Josef laid on the table a hand-drawn example.
Here is a crude map of the Kernford area.
Don't take it as accurate. I just drew it to demonstrate a topographic map.
See these wavy dotted lines? They represent 100-foot altitude differences between lines. If you look east of Kernford on the map, you see lines indicating where the land is 100 feet higher than at the previous line. As you get into the hills, the lines get closer together.
As the hills become steeper, said Dennis.
Right. Once you are used to looking at such maps, you can get a quick picture of the terrain.
I can see the usefulness, said Kenric, though our registrars don't usually concern themselves with altitude, only straight distances.
That's okay. I can show the methods of measuring height differences. One way is called triangulation, where points on the ground are at the vertices of a chain or network of triangles. By measuring angles, the sides of a triangle can be computed or measured directly. Those measurements are then used as sides of adjoining or related triangles. It's a tedious work, but can be very accurate if care is taken. The second method involves levels like a carpenter uses. A bubble level is attached to a crosshaired eyepiece that can be magnifying or not.
Once the eyepiece is on level, the surveyor looks at a calibrated pole placed some distance away. From where the eyepiece crosshairs lie on the pole, you know how much higher or lower a pole is compared to the spot with the eyepiece. Again, this can be tedious, but with care, extremely accurate relative heights can be determined.
I don't think the tedium will be a problem, said Kenrick, smiling.
One of the qualifications of a registrar is obsessive care in handling numbers, maps, and records. I expect many of them will take to this new task with enthusiasm.
Kenrick's smile faded.
However, I have to caution that getting maps for all of Cadellium will be a problem. Some clans are unlikely to either share mapping data or allow Keelan registrars into their provinces.
Lewis and Dennis both cursed, but Cullet seemed unperturbed.
I guess he expected this, thought Yosef. He's more used to dealing directly with the other headmen.
I'll communicate with the other headmen about this, said Cullet.
I think once 10 or so of the clans agree, the others will be forced to cooperate. If necessary, some form of pressure can be applied, such as delays in sharing cannon or the resulting maps.
Yosef, do you think it's sufficient to have registrars carry out work on improving maps, or do we need more men?
Cullet, I suggest that we start with a few registrars and add some selected other people to learn the type of surveying I'm talking about. I'll work with them until they understand what I think we need.
Yosef made no more comments, and the meeting adjourned. Battlefields. Yosef had one more item he'd planned to include at the meeting, ultimately deciding it wasn't the right moment. No matter how much the Cadelli trained and produced more weapons, he didn't relish the thought of an open field battle against the Narthani army. The islanders would probably win, but the cost would be far higher than he thought any headman understood, especially after their belief in a stirring victory at Moreland City. In contrast, Yosef believed they had been extraordinarily lucky. The terrain features the clans had taken advantage of, the two incredibly stupid errors by the Moreland and Iwal headmen, and the Narthani being unprepared to expect a clan flank attack had combined to lead to a tactical draw, not an outright victory. He didn't believe they could hope to be lucky again. A major class of contingencies, perhaps the most important, involved a situation where the clans might have to face the Narthani again in a field battle. One where the clans couldn't rely on luck or Narthani mistakes to save them. Although Yosef recognized that he was no general, he knew that where a battle took place was often decisive, if one side had terrain features in its favor. He didn't doubt many clan leaders would intuitively use terrain wherever they could, but he feared they weren't ready to appreciate the importance of terrain being a decisive factor if they had the opportunity to choose the battlefield. Compounding the problem, Yosef had no doubt the Narthani leaders understood the use of terrain, and they would work on their side to pick sites favorable to them and unfavorable to the clans. When he was a teenager, Yosef and fellow gamesters had endlessly argued and discussed the strategies used in famous battles, pretending they were qualified to critique military campaigns. He remembered multiple examples of famous battles where terrain was a major factor, although histories, novels, and movies tended to attribute victories to more glamorous factors such as leaders, weapons, and noble causes. At the Battle of Crecy, the English defeated a large French army, with the longbow given credit for changing the nature of warfare. But the English victory was also due to a judicious choice of the battlefield. The English chose the site and waited for the French,
Towns and a river prevented flank attacks by the French cavalry, the heart of the French army. The English positioned themselves at the top of a slope, so the French cavalry had to ride upward to attack the English, only to find the archers protected by pits and obstacles. It was a shattering defeat for the French, and the English suffered few casualties. Less than a century later, not having learned their lesson, the French suffered another disaster at the hands of the English at Agincourt, where a combination of weather and terrain gave the English longbowmen an overwhelming advantage. Their flanks protected by dense woods through which the French cavalry couldn't maneuver, the English positioned themselves at the end of a large field recently plowed, a field that had turned to mud from a recent rain. Armored French knights had to slog through deep mud to get at the English and were slaughtered by longbowmen. He recalled other examples, terrain that restricted maneuvering at the Battle of Chickamauga in the U.S. Civil War, the Russian winter's effects on Napoleon's and Hitler's armies, and the French ceding of high ground to the Vietnamese communists at Dien Bien Phu. Military theory writers often emphasize terrain. Sun Tzu's On War had an entire chapter on army positioning. Terrain played an especially important role in first-generation warfare, as defined by a Pentagon report referencing battles with massed men using column and line tactics, before such tactics were rendered obsolete by rifled muskets, breech-loading rifles, and cannon, not to mention the first machine guns and indirect artillery fire. Yosef saw only two ways to get the Narthani to leave Gedalium. Either defeat them in pitched battles outside of Pretty City, or besiege Pretty City until they withdrew by ship or surrendered. If it became necessary to fight the Narthani in a field engagement, he wanted to scour the island for battlefield sites that might give the Gedeli the advantage. It was not an appealing option. Then again, neither was a siege.